Dr. Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about
the circulation system of the heart. I was thinking about what I'd pump out for podcasts, and essentially people know in general that the heart's a pump, and it pumps through the arteries and goes through capillaries. There's a resistance, you get a pump, the arteries, and then the veins, and it goes through the system. And essentially, for a pump to operate, so that's your circulation system, if it pumps to operate, you need a system of valves, and resistance, you know, what's the, people could say, the resistance is in the capillary. So this is where the arteries and veins connect together. They connect through essentially a load resistor. And the advantage of this is that these are tiny, tiny tubes. So they cover, they have a very small diameter, very large surface area. So they can actually distribute the blood. So every cell in your body is somehow connected to a artery, or in the brain, it's connected to a cell which can remove nutrients and push the nutrients to the neurons. So your brain is not in contact with blood; it's in contact with cells which wrap around, and there's a blood-brain barrier. Let's just put that that aside. You can look at a few things like that. So rather than capillaries as a resistance, you've got to have essentially a battery to drive it through. So if the heart pumps it in a very short boom boom, say a tenth of the amount of time as resting for a series of times. So the boom, first boom is loading up the heart, the second boom is pumping into your body. That boom at most would be 10%. And so something's got to be added in for that 10% to give it that 10% to a much more even flow. And I'll talk about that. And then you need something that when something's compressing, it pushes the blood one way, and there's a series of valves. Now, I suppose the interesting aspect to this is that I taught the heart, looked at the heart through textbooks and stuff like that, and then eventually having a heart operation, the greater things unfolded. So essentially, people say, and this is incorrect, the heart has four chambers, and this is a build-up chamber it's called the atrium, which sort of, as the heart pumps and it goes through, it builds up in that area, and then that chamber closes off at the top, opens up at the bottom, and goes into the pumping section called the ventricle. The ventricle is a strong muscle, and this then contracts, closes it, so none of the ventricular stuff moves back into the atrium, and then that moves around the system. Now, it's a four-chamber system. Essentially, the heart is, there's two hearts which are superimposed on each other. They're binary heart. So one fills up with deoxygenated blood, and then that's the traditionally called the right-hand side of the heart. However, realistically, that's the front of the heart. So this is really the first thing it goes across, and then that pumps through through a brief artery and pushes blood from the heart through the lungs. Deoxygenated blood gets reoxygenated and the carbon dioxide comes out of the blood. We'll discuss that in a little while. And then that goes back quickly into the atrium, the left atrium, or realistic speaking, given the way the heart is, heart doesn't point down, it points off to the left. So the actual, what we think of the base of the heart is actually lying sideways. It's sort of heart shaped, but it's sort of, it's as if you've got the heart resting on the table. So the left hand or rear part, it goes through, and this other section is much more powerful, and it pumps and closes a valve into the artery system. Now, let's debunk a few things. First one is that the heart has four chambers. It turns out if you look at a heart and look at an accurate model of a heart, you count the chambers of the heart itself. You go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, because on the atrium are these spongy bellows, which are called orosyl's ears. And so if you take the heart and skin it, take the membrane off it, you will see exposed basically the muscle, but a fat layer over that which holds the veins in place, the wiring in place. It's like a PCB board on the outside. And it also have these things called orosyls, with ears. They look as though, they're called orosyls because they look like dog ears. And indeed, there are six chambers in the heart. However, in the body, it's best to describe it as an eight chamber things, and you describe your arteries and basically your arteries as another chamber. So the arteries from your left or rear ventricles, which goes in, that is itself another chamber. So really, and then the artery between the heart and the lung. So the artery takes blood away from the heart. Now, why this is a chamber? A, because it can fill the volume of blood. It is a muscle, and it relaxes a little bit when the it's elastic, and so the heart can overpressure and build it up, and then it will maintain a standard pressure and actually contract and push the blood away. And this chamber is a significantly large chamber. It's called the aorta. So the aorta comes, your heart's lying flat left to right, so the aorta just comes out and hooks downwards. It's not a full candy cane, but it is sort of like a candy cane with not much of a hook on it. And it comes out and goes down and divides into two. So it really looks as though the aorta and the heart system is the way the heart really should be drawn. It's just that people, the aorta is it's high pressure, but it's also a muscle, and it's basically, I can attest to this, is inedible. So because it's inedible, people don't cut it out. They just have it there. But the aorta, the major thing of that is that your pump is an instantaneous pump. It pumps dump dump. So your heart pumps in a dump. You know, the heart pumping is a dump. Now for me, I go click, because that dump is, when you hear the dump, it's beginning to pump. It makes no sound as it pumps. It only makes a closing sound when it closes up. Now, of course, for me, if you call it the eighth chamber, the aorta, was a chamber, and it's pressurizing, and the valve between those two things were giving way, and it was pumping backwards. Now, it's apparently a fairly common thing, and it's fixed up by the various people. But there you have it. Now, so the aorta is this large tube. In fact, it's really pretty indistinguishable from the arteries. The compression of the arteries are provide constant pressure all the way through. So it's sort of like a distributed large pressure vessel. And then the veins are pretty incredible, because these are lower pressure, and we'll talk about the valves and veins a bit later on. The veins are very mobile in the body. That is, the veins can go within the body if it wants to have a cool flesh and keep heat within, or if the body is too hot, it can actually, it's like a radiator, variable radiator system, the veins. So, unlike the arteries, which are over muscle and are pretty tough, the veins are flexible, and they basically just have to return the blood. Now, let's talk about valves. Now, the aorta cell and the atrium there's no gap between it. However, in the so there's no valve there. So the aorta cells, the ears, have no valves, but everything else has a valve. And so there is a valve between the atrium and the ventricle and the artery. So the artery is the artery to the lung, pulmonary artery, or the aorta. Pulmonary means lung. So there's four valves there. That is the valve atrium to ventricle, then ventricle to artery. It's 1, 2, and twice the pulmonary and the body to, this is the lung version, because it's double. So that gives you four. But obviously, if you're looking at it as an engineering diagram, there has to be six. And indeed, the other valve is a valve which is a little bit hard to see because it's a distributed valve. The veins are half conduction tube and half. Is there a one-way conduction tube? Now, in fact, when you have a vein taken out of your leg, as I have, to be stuck over the top of your heart so that it's all rip-roaring ready to go, they have to invert it because the blood travels in one way when they pick a fairly heavy vein. And so essentially the aortas, the arteries, have a certain aspect. Now, there's a process where the arteries absorb calcium and cholesterol and thicken up, and you can cark yourself through it. Now, the other aspect of it is that your heart is pumping. However, as you exercise, you're exercising another distributed part of your heart, which is the arteries. So the arteries basically are a muscle, and they improve as you exercise it. So the major distribution of the heart is it's got a circulatory system. It's a muscle, and muscles get better from exercise. There's several aspects of it. They become conditioned and more responsive to it coming out. So there's this exercise regime, and essentially there's sort of calorific exercise, which I'm sort of doing now and conditioning exercises. So you have to actually, for conditioning exercises and also perhaps calorific exercises, that sort of is an overlap between it. You have to get your heartbeat up to that top 20%. So I think it's 220 minus your age, then minus other factors if you're on medication, and then you've got to get yourself. So if you go above that rate, it's sort of slightly dangerous. Not recommended. However, the point is that exercise to be effective for calorie burn up doesn't have to be strenuous. In fact, if it's strenuous, it's your body. You have gone through a exercise regime which has actually triggered slowdown mechanisms. So, in order to actually get up to exercise, there's this method of taking a period of time of just gentle exercise to start off with, and as you build up, you condition yourself up. And the essential thing to keep on pushing. So it's really the number of minutes, if you can keep up. So at most I can keep up to say quarter of an hour, 20 minutes at the high heart rate. So when I was in hospital rehab, they kept me underneath, I think, 120 beats per minute. However, I've got to really get above 136 beats per minute to pump across. Now, there's a series of nerves which go down to the heart to get it to operate. Now, the heart muscles are muscles which never get tired, and the way the muscles never get tired, so the muscles have to do some work. The way that the muscles never get tired is that they chomp through heaps of sugar, but so they absorb a lot of food, but they also convert the food very efficiently to ATP with mitochondria. So your heart muscle, whereas your skin muscle might have one or two mitochondria, the heart muscle has thousands of mitochondria. So these are the energy attributes of it. And the heart muscle is, besides being a muscle, is a hybrid between a muscle and a nerve cell. So what the heart muscle does is, rather than being individually hooked up to nerve, it produces a nerve pulse itself, an electrical pulse. So so you've got your nerves, which are specialist cells which have synapses and axons for communication, and dendrites to actually propagate it at the top through the cell. So the dendrites trigger the cell body to send a pulse down axons, which go to the synapses, which then release chemical transmitters. A nerve pulse, whereas the heart, as far as I understand it, operates electrically. So with nerves are, I suppose, it's still the process of polarization. Now, polarization is, so it's electrical, but the nerves, so the nerve pulse travels along a nerve by a polarization wave, and essentially inside the nerve fiber there are proteins which, I'll just see what's going on. I'm going to have to stop now because I think my phone has just given me a message, so I'll see what it says. No, it just says my phone's running out of battery. There you go. Okay, so it's got a yes, so inside your cell are polar proteins, which flip, change charge and orientation, and so they attract comparatively potassium and sodium. And I'll have to go back and research exactly what happens, but I don't know if they physically move, but they in a local electric field, a local ion field, then cause a wave of potassium to be expelled and sodium ingressed. And so it is actually a little electric, a little distributed linear battery which operates with ion flow. There's ion flow. So there's ion flow which crosses a membrane, which is powered by the basic capacitance of a protein which operates. Now, this actually happens inside the heart as well. So the firing of one muscle, section of a muscle, then travels up, it contracts and then pushes out. So your heart is a wave, a little spark goes at one at the base of the ventricle or the top of the atrium, and it goes up, and rather than compresses all at once, it compresses in a wave upwards. And so this is a complicated wave. And of course, you can have the wave refracting and bouncing off the incorrect stuff. And essentially, what happens is that you have you have the basic electric pulse goes through. So these are the very start, the dum bump. The dump-dump is the sharp spark up, sharp spark down. The dump is the closing, so it sparks, and then you hear the sound afterwards as it closes. And those sparks is from the way that you hook it up, because the two batteries, the two heart, the atrium and the ventricle, are opposing each other. So if you put a potential across it, you'll see this up and down, and then there's repolarization. So that big rise up as the heart, the effective nerve cells in the heart muscle undergo a process where the charge moves about, and you get this repolarization. Now, then, for some reason, there's another tiny little pulse, a little microscopic pulse, which is a way out. And so this is with a ECG. Now, there is this thing that you can tell pretty quickly about the overall fitness of a heart, whether it's struggling or not, because if this is operating completely, the system it's got lots of live feedback monitoring the heart rate. So obviously when you're stressed, your heart's going as fast as possible, it's going beating as fast as possible. But if it's not stressed and it's in its rest mode, its monitoring system's deciding when it needs to pump. So if it's monitoring systems, it's actually checking a few variables and taking a poll, it's polling some things and getting a quorum of signals to decide when it's pumps. Now, the nature of this means that if you are, the fitter you are, the less precisely regular your heartbeat is. Now, so this is important in that I think people, well, firstly, I suppose, I think there is really no excuse for teaching a simplified heart which doesn't really explain. There is a point, if your entire mode is just to talk, can I say, unlike most nights, it's absolutely bitterly cold here. I'd say it'd be about 10 degrees Celsius at home. And there is not a cloud in the sky. Well, that's the two aspects of it. No clouds in the sky means no moisture build-up. And if no moisture, it chills down. It heats up a lot more and chills down with that lack of moisture around here. So there you've got the heart. And so, essentially, role of the heart, as we describe, is a pump to recharge the artery pump, to repower, so the heart doesn't pump blood around the body. The heart recharges or tops up or refuels the main pump, which is the aorta. So the main thing that pumps blood around the body is the aorta. So I'm just trying to work out how this whole system works going on here. Oh God! So I have to give that up. So that's the overall view of the heart and heart system, and it's a bit of a thing for me. So when it's been shown to me, I sort of, and people even in the hospital, and when they're discussing it, there's this sort of, so it's technical knowledge that people know, and so they there's this gulf between what people discuss and know. Now I do think there's an advantage for knowing what the heart is for heart health, etc. All the way through. There's an advantage to it. There's also an advantage of knowing about the aorta and essentially how your general training of it is. And the fact is that if you lose weight, your heart, essentially if you've got, you're reducing the load that your blood has to go through, your blood doesn't have to go through. So the more of your heart's a certain size, the smaller your body is compared to it. It's sort of like a bigger engine, like putting a V8 inside a Mini rather than a Volkswagen flatbed one inside a monster truck. It sort of makes sense to lose weight. So I do think there's an advantage in knowing this. I myself, what was that? I think a lot of people are just, knowledge is credentialed. They want to know knowledge such that it is, they get the credential. They can be classified as doing something, whereas sort of like this the dissipation knowledge in a secondary sense. Just looking down here, there's some weird things in front of me. They're interested not in knowledge transfer, but knowledge, the social handles, which is sort of like a handle on data in a computer. If people exchange the handles, your computer does not transfer. Say you put a picture in your computer and you want to move it from one file to file, you're just changing, the picture will stay the same, but your directory of where that is got a different, your handle structure. So there's this idea of a handle of data. And I think people do that with knowledge in that they just want to ensure that's sort of very high level of things and don't need to go. So I would definitely support for education, for analysis, for completeness of thought, a complete discussion of the heart. Okay, I'm going to get started on the next podcast. Thank you.
podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.